You know I'm not dead, because I'm talking to you. He had become extremely impassioned and agitated. And yet one can't make other people listen to me. Somebody tell me why, because one don't know why. Can you tell me why? At this point Joe was confronted with another surprise, so great that it temporarily distracted his attention from his immediate problem of not being able to get people to talk to him. What's going on around here? He demanded. One got different clothes now than when one left to go with that guy. One don't get it. But all of a sudden one got a suit on like one used to have like you got. Leonard, not exactly prepared for this contingency, was thinking quickly of an answer that Joe might accept. Dot you see. He began slowly, you originally came onto the Earth plane for a particular purpose. How do you think you know so blasted much about me? One never saw you before in my life. You wore your regular clothes until you had accomplished your reason for being on the Earth plane, Leonard continued cautiously. Then you dispensed with your physical body, changed your type of clothing, and went over to what we call the other side. Over where? I don't go anywhere. I'm here. Don't you hear me? Nobody seems to hear me when I talk anymore. Yes, I heard, answered Leonard. You are not actually with us. But because you have temporarily returned to the Earth, you automatically took on the same clothing you wore before you left the Earth. It is appropriate to the Earth plane but not to the plane where you have just come from. But we here on the Earth are restricted, and we have lower vibrating bodies. We cannot move as you do, so we were. Come on, brother. Joe interrupted. Don't tell me you don't move around on the Earth, because I moved all over the place. Joe's tones throughout this exchange of comments revealed callousness, insolence and contemptuousness in the extreme. A repulsive cynicism was predominantly evident. Had he been present in his physical body, it is more than likely that many persons would have involuntarily cringed away from him. But all I do now is talk to myself, Joe went on. Nobody pays attention to me. They did when I was there. How come? Doesn't anybody talk to you where you are now? Asked Leonard. Oh, us guys got a crowd. We talk, but we don't get nowhere. Do you ever talk for the purpose of trying to help one another? What's that? Joe asked. Very suspiciously. To help someone improve in some way, Leonard answered, to have more happiness, to aid what you call mankind. Or are the people looking out only for themselves? Well, you sound like a preacher, snarled Joe disgustedly, as his intonation of the word preacher reeked with insolence. No, I'm a lawyer. Is that what you are? Drawled Joe, his tone revealing an utterly contemptuous disdain for all individuals comprising the legal profession. Well, if you are a lawyer and you know so much, tell me how we are gonna help people when they won't listen to us? We all talk to each other and to everybody, and nobody else ever listens. No, don't tell me I'm dead, because I know I'm alive. Do you have any purpose in life where you are now? Asked Leonard. No. Never had any purpose anyhow, Joe answered, more abjectly than insolently. Do you believe there is a God or a power that created you? Joe said nothing for a moment, then there was a long sigh and another moment of silence. I suppose, he answered, resignedly and dejectedly. Asked why he thought he had been created in the first place, he again pondered a moment before answering, I've often wondered. I don't know. Don't see any reason for anything. Are you interested in finding out? Sure, Joe responded quickly. I wouldn't be wasting my time talking to you if I wasn't. As the conversation progressed, Leonard gradually broke down some portion of the belligerent attitude that Joe had manifested earlier. Joe finally admitted that he was far from satisfied and happy, just wandering around doing nothing. In fact, he readily admitted that he and the companions he had accumulated were, as he said, sick of the whole job. He further indicated that his purpose in originally asking for help was to try to find someone he could talk to who could help him get out of the mess he was in. Leonard suggested that Joe call on the people who had brought him to this place. Joe was hesitant at first, his attitude indicating that he was not sure he wanted to trust them. But with further effort Leonard was able to pierce through an additional portion of Joe's armor of arrogance and cynicism. And it was obvious that when that cynicism was broken down, Joe was sincerely desirous of getting help. When you leave us, Leonard admonished after the softening up process, ask your guide, the one who brought you here tonight, to help you get out of the mess you are in. He will take you where you want to go, and he will talk to you as he has talked to us, because, you see, he has been teaching us too. You can put your complete confidence in him. It won't hurt you. You will never regret it. Then in a week, 2 weeks, or a month, maybe he will bring you back to us and maybe we can talk again. Say, you're slick one, exclaimed Joe, for the first time showing some real interest. You read my mind. I was gonna ask you if I could come back and tell you whether or not this thing worked. What is your name? Asked Leonard. There was a moment of obviously distrusting hesitation. Then, extremely warily, my name's Joe. What's yours? You like the name Joe? It's as good as any. You're not gonna find out anything different. That's all right, Leonard answered calmly, unmoved by Joe's lack of confidence in him. But by this time it was obvious that Joe's morale had been improved. You know, he ventured, hopefully, but with a remaining trace of wariness, you may be on the level about all this. We are on the level, replied Leonard with an assurance that seemed to strike a responsive note with Joe. Okay, thanks, pal, responded Joe, his tone indicating for the first time an incipient friendliness. And I'm gonna try this. We know you like people, Leonard went on, and because we love you. What do you mean, you love me? Interrupted Joe. Nobody loves me. Then after a pause, he continued, is this whole thing really on the level? Let one of these other people. He paused, moving Mrs. Gauze's head to look around the group. Is this on the level, you with the red dress? Joe was assured that everything was indeed on the level, after which Leonard challenged, and you love people a great deal. You are pretty tough. But that's mostly just on the outside. You have a soft spot in your heart as big as my head, and you know it. Let's not go into that sob stuff, huh? Joe countered quickly, as if in an attempt to cover up. We've got a deal, though, Leonard reminded him. Hey, you asked the guide if I can come back, Joe pleaded. Do you know what I was gonna say? I was gonna say if I can't come back, I won't leave. But he is motioning for me, so I guess I better go. We'll look for you, Leonard assured him. You talk with your guide, and we know it will work. And we love you and your whole bunch over there. That kinda hits below the belt, but we'll take it. Thanks, pal. 49, Chapter 3, Transition. What actually happened to Joe at the time he was hit by the car? His earthly life ended, but he was not aware of that. Why didn't he realize that the accident had been fatal? Why didn't he understand that he had no physical body? If just prior to his accident Joe had for some reason given thought to his own death, because of his orthodox religious background he would have assumed that there would have been no possibility of his going to hell. Well, he did not go to hell. He didn't go to heaven, either, after the car hit him. He went home, just where he had started to go when he left the bar. He was an uncouth, bitter, quick-tempered bartender named Joe as the car bore down on him. He was the same Joe as he left the scene of the accident. Quick changes occurred in his body, as he passed from one state of being into another as he made his transition, but he was not at the time aware of them. What changes? And why was he not aware of them? At the time the speeding car struck him, he was able-bodied, strong, and completely healthy. Anything having to do with the ending of his earthly life was far from his consciousness. One of the characteristics of transition is that you pass through that doorway and arrive on the other side with the same consciousness you had at the moment of starting through the doorway. As you read further, you will understand this better, for here you will meet those who passed through the doorway and knew what had happened, as well as those who passed through and did not know it, like Joe. So Joe took on another body, a finer textured body, instantly, which he recognized as his own, inasmuch as it was a duplicate of his physical body he had just left. Since it was of a finer texture, however, it caused Joe no end of difficulty when he continued on his way home, for no one seemed to recognize him when he arrived. They acted as if he weren't there and, indeed, to them he was not. They were totally unable to see the new, finer body that was Joe. Most people cannot see the Imperator teachers who come from the other side and talk with the Orm group, but the ability to see what is beyond the normal five senses has been more highly developed in some, to whom the teachers are visible. Joe's family did not have this ability, and no matter what Joe said or did, they were unable to have any knowledge of or make any recognition of his presence. It was this frustration, due to his inability to make contact with his family and friends, that drove him finally to stop hanging around his home and spend his time with those on the other side who were having the same difficulty with Earth people that he was having. But Joe's consciousness contained no thought of his own death. This is because people do not experience passing over as being a process of any kind. They simply find themselves on the other side. Some are aware of what has taken place, depending upon the circumstances surrounding their going over and their preparation for it. Others are not at all aware of it, just as in many instances upon awakening in the morning they are not aware of the several hours of time that have elapsed since they went to sleep. Oddly enough, this is true in many instances where a person passes on with dramatic suddenness, as Joe did. Though you've gone through the doorway, the going is not necessarily instilled into the consciousness. One moment you are in your physical body. Then during a continuation of the same moment you are on the other side, in your other body, but with no break in your continuing consciousness. Despite the dramatic suddenness of accidental transitions of all kinds, such as Joe's, a mantle of forgetfulness, by one of nature's perfect laws, is mercifully allowed to fall around the incident itself. Thus Joe was healthy and strong and cynical and bellicose on his way home from the bar when the car bore down upon him. He was still the same Joe on his way home a few moments later. But there is no one circumstance, no one rule of thumb, that is universally applicable to all transitions. Each case is an individual variant, governed by one's consciousness and his preparation for this event. Thus there are those who made their transition with the same suddenness as Joe and, like him, are able to walk away from it but, unlike him, are fully aware of what is happening. Members of the Orm group had an example of this type of awareness when a young soldier from Vietnam, speaking through Mrs. Gores on March 4, 1966, told of his own passing amid the shells of combat. This contact with the Orm group was the occasion of his first return to the Earth plane, and he spoke nervously, as if he were not wholly sure of himself in what was for him at the moment a new role. "It is a very strange sensation," he said, "when one stands alongside that which is lying on the ground and which people call you. You see your body lying there, and you see the same thing happening all around you. But I had been trained by my father and mother, and I knew that the first thing for me to do was to get out of there, to leave as soon as I could. So I started on my way." While the young soldier does not specifically state it, it seems safe to assume, from the way he spoke of it, that he was altogether aware of the fact that he had just died. He saw the body he had discarded, but he immediately turned and left, with no further concern about it. Why was this young man fully cognizant of what was happening and so many others are not? The answer lies in his statement, "I had been trained by my father and mother." But, as he explained to the group, when he was 10 years old both his parents went through the doorway of transition and he was put in a children's home. During the next 8 years, although life in this home was not in any way a traumatic experience, he was never really happy because of the immense contrast presented to his own early home life, a life that had been a deeply satisfying one in a happy home where love prevailed. During the years following the departure of his parents, he spent hours reflecting upon his early teachings which he remembered so fondly. Upon reaching the age of 18, he entered military service, was sent to take part in that unfortunate conflict in Vietnam, and in due time became a war casualty. Most people of course do not die violent deaths, as did Joe and this soldier. Most individuals make their transitions as the result of some type of illness. Nature, the creative principle, God, infinite love, call it whatever you like, has provided in the physical body a certain condition that holds the soul, the individual, within it. It has a great magnetic pull that holds you in your body. This is good, for if it were not for that magnetic power of the physical body, Many times that body would be cast aside before the one living within it has learned the lessons which he came to the earth plane this time to learn, or before he has given what he was supposed to give. When the time comes for one to leave the earth plane, the body begins to prepare to let the individual go. But with some very strong bodies and with some who are inordinately attached to material things of the world, the magnetic pull is much stronger, and the letting go process is correspondingly difficult. Consequently, a struggle ensues, and in the struggle the tension causes a distortion of the cells themselves, resulting in a lack of ease, or disease. But finally, after a certain time, relaxation takes place and the individual is free. Thus there are those who suffer greatly before they go. They may have chosen this suffering, one of the imperator teachers has pointed out, and they choose not so much the particular condition of the physical body but the hours of suffering as a cleansing process, to relieve them and clear them from any dust and undesirable negation that may linger, so that they may have their clear, unhampered freedom when they leave their bodies. It is not necessary for anyone, but they have chosen it. Of interest as an example of transition of one who suffered through the throes of disease and who also had had an extensive and solid spiritual background is the case of one whom we will call Jiri. When the time came for me to make my transition, he reported to the AUM members, having had spiritual training and a very long and serious illness, I was not loath to go. I had been struggling for a long time when suddenly I found myself free. This is a strange sensation. I recall looking at my body lying there in the hospital bed and thought how uninteresting it was, how emaciated, and I was filled with vigor and life by contrast. But I knew not where to go, so I just stood still and looked around. Presently, one of my former friends who had preceded me in transition approached. He spoke to me and greeted me. I greeted him, but I was still looking back at my family and wondering what kind of clothes they were going to put on my body and just what would come next. My friend had the intelligence to know what was in my mind and remained silent. It seemed that I was still there in the hospital room, but there had been changes in my consciousness, my body and my environment. After a few moments he asked, "Are you ready?" It was not until then that I was inclined to go, and I answered, "Yes, I am ready." He said quietly, "Then come, let us leave." And I started on this fascinating journey. You will note that, unlike Joe, Jiri was keenly aware of his leaving his physical body. This was due in part to the fact that his transition, or graduation, unlike Joe's, had not been unexpected. But it was due mainly to his relatively long life of solid spiritual training, which had prepared him to understand the process and its significance. The struggle, the disease, or other manifestation of the struggle, does not always occur. There are those / who have fulfilled their mission, and they know they have fulfilled. The cells of these individuals' bodies, on their own level of consciousness, know they have fulfilled. And so there is no struggle, no disease. The individual steps serenely out of his body and leaves it. Nor is a period of unconsciousness prior to leaving the earth plane inherently necessary. It is not even ideally desirable. There are individuals who experience neither struggle and its resulting disease nor unconsciousness. And this is as it should be. They approach their transition, go through the doorway and find none of the usual obstacles in completing the process of transition. They go through it in the same full consciousness that they would go from one room into another, and it is within the power of everyone to accomplish this. You have already learned that there are differences in the experiences of individuals immediately upon their release from the earth. There is such a wide range of differences, in fact, that a word of emphasis is appropriate. There are billions upon countless billions of snowflakes, each unique to itself in terms of its individual pattern, yet basically the same. In like manner, on the other side of the veil called transition there are as many variations as there are individuals and degrees of evolvement and understanding. It is obviously impossible to give a description of all the variant and tangent conditions and degrees of conditions. This is the reason you must guard against any assumption that, this, then, is what I can expect to find. What you will find may or may not be described or ever touched upon in these pages. In my father's house are many mansions. Your experience is being determined now by the manner in which you are building, or not building, a solid spiritual foundation. The present tends to determine the future. Chapter 4, The Cause of Transition. Now we can answer the question as to what happened to Joe when he did not survive on the earth plane after the car struck him. Let us examine for a few moments just what occurs at the moment of death or transition, and how it is accomplished. The explanation usually given for the cause of it is that the soul leaves the body. And normally perhaps that is sufficient. But what does it mean? The circumstances of transition vary greatly, of course. As we have found, one passes away peacefully in his sleep, another, as in the case of Cyril, passes away as the result of a severe illness. Others, like Joe and the young Vietnam soldier, meet death as the result of a violent accident. It is commonly said that all these individuals have passed on as the result of any one of an almost endless number of causes. In actual fact, all these vast numbers of so-called causes without exception are the result of one common cause. What, then, is this event which occurs in all transitions? You might say, well, I have heard that there is something which is called the silver cord that connects the immortal self with the physical body. Transition occurs when this silver cord is severed. It is true that the silver cord does remain intact during the entirety of one's physical lifetime. It allows the immortal self to leave the body at times, maintaining it through the lifeline of the silver cord. But the silver cord, the thread of divinity connecting the eternal you with your physical body, is never actually severed in the sense of being torn from the body. More appropriately, the silver cord releases the physical body. The one thing that brings about all transitions and transition does not occur until this happens is an action by a part of the individual's inner self which is very wise, being a literal part of omniscient God. Regardless of the multitude of circumstances necessitating it, transition occurs when, and only when, that inner God part of you decides that time has come to turn the switch, as it were, and cut off the flow of vital life energy that has kept the body alive. To be sure, the outer circumstances are the cause of this action on the part of the inner self. But even in the event of violent accident, as in Joe's case, where sudden transition occurs, where the flow of life energy is cut off instantly, this death is the result of an instantaneous decision on the part of the individual's inner self that the physical body is no longer useful. The accident in this case was the cause of the immediate decision to cut off the flow of life energy. But the turning off of this figurative switch was the cause of the transition itself, not the accident per se. What is the fate of the silver cord after being disengaged from the now inert and lifeless body? Normally a period of time up to 3 days elapses between the moment of actual transition, the moment when the soul cuts off the flow of vital life energy to the body, and the final disengaging of the silver cord. This period of time, for those who need it, is for the purpose of allowing the individual a thread of contact with physical life while he makes his initial adjustment to his new environment. The amount of time needed is determined in large part by the spiritual progress the individual has made on the earth plane. There are spiritually sensitive people who, while attending a funeral service, have observed the individual above his body in the casket. This is a case of one being loath to leave the physical body. As Ramakaraka, one of the Imperator teachers, explained, it takes time for the individual to adjust to the reality that he can no longer inhabit the shell which he has left. Others, though it happens much more rarely, are able to complete the release immediately upon the turning of the switch that cuts off the flow of life energy to the body. There are differences, of course, not only in degrees of spiritual progression but in states of consciousness, which serve to create many different types of experiences for people immediately upon their transition. We are told by one of the teachers, at least 50% of the people who come to our side do not realize that they have left their bodies, and will not believe it. Many people are willing to be taught, many of them permit us to prove to them that this is true, but countless numbers of them stubbornly refuse to listen and to be shown. Joe, you will recall, had been wandering around for some 4 months of earth time, still refusing to believe that he was dead. And those like him, unprepared for transition, are legion. One other brief comment is in order before leaving the subject of transition. There are those who believe that if on one's deathbed he makes repentance for what by this time he is willing to concede have been his sins, the keeper of the pearly gates will roll out the red carpet for him rather than send him to the hell where all his associates probably thought he would go anyway. It has been thought that if he makes his plea impassioned enough and fervent enough, he can wipe out an entire lifetime of wrongdoing and, in fact, even crime. It is fortunate that this is not true. Life bestows no special sentimentality upon an individual at the moment of transition. The laws of being are applied impersonally at all times. On both sides of the doorway called transition, there is only justice and balance. Every I must be dotted and every T must be crossed. What a man sows, that shall he also reap. This does not negate anything that has been said about a loving and forgiving God. But forgiveness is not something that is bestowed upon you by a sentimental God who, because of your 11th hour repentance, decides that maybe you're not such a bad sort after all. It is, rather, the result of your living the spiritual laws of your own being and is a process that works from the inside outward. Lastly, there is an altogether fallacious idea, held unfortunately by countless numbers of individuals, to the effect that when you die and go to the other side, you have bestowed upon you, as a sort of byproduct of the process, a very high degree of wisdom, perhaps almost approaching omniscience. Many stand in awestruck reverence in the presence of any message from the other side. It would be sacrilege, they feel, not to accept unquestioningly anything and everything that comes from that mysterious realm. As we saw in the case of Joe, you approach and arrive at that doorway having certain characteristics and personality traits, with certain spiritual assets and perhaps certain moral ineptitudes. The process of changing planes neither takes anything away from you nor bestows anything upon you. It merely separates you from your physical body. You will be exactly the same Bill or Mary Smith that you are here. Thus, just as you do not listen spellbound to every traditional Tom, Dick and Harry while still on the earth plane, with their sometimes ill-conceived, as well as sometimes actually nefarious, advice, so you would not listen to the same conglomerate of advice just because the same Tom, Dick and Harry have now gone to that mysterious and greatly misunderstood other side. 4 months of roaming around following his transition had not changed Joe a particle, except to increase his confusion and frustration because he was not able to communicate with those still in physical bodies. Thus, putting even a particle of credence in any message or advice from Joe at that point would have been, to say the least, somewhat less than advisable. Communicants from the great beyond the other side need to be checked with certainly no less care than those still in their physical bodies. Chapter 5, On the Threshold. When Joe left the AUM meeting on that Wednesday night in 1958, under the care and guidance of Aramia's, after having promised to ask for help, he was conscious of a sensation of contriteness. This was a new feeling for him, and had he experienced it on the earth plane he would have been suspicious of its presence in his makeup and would have banished it immediately. But now he felt no resentment toward this sensation. He was, indeed, mildly surprised to find that he rather welcomed it. It somehow seemed appropriate. For what seemed to Joe to be a considerable time, he accompanied Aramia's in deep silence, completely absorbed in his own thoughts, cantered around his encounter with this group of people he had just left. Those people, he thought. One wonder why they seemed so different from the people one used to hang around with when one was over there where they are. One guess they are right when they say I'm not over where they are. And they couldn't have heard me, except for that lady I had to talk through. They sure seemed like a bunch of good guys. And they want to help me. Joe spent a few moments contemplating his new sensation of having someone wanting to be of service to him. And he found he was warmed inside by the thought that someone cared what happened to him. Previously, on the earth plane, he would never have admitted to this soft-hearted attitude and feeling. They sure did one thing for me, Joe continued in his thoughts. They made me realize I'm not happy in this wandering around over here. I'm not getting any place. What did they say one ought to do? One no, they said I ought to ask this teacher for help. Well, maybe one ought to. Gee, one think one will. He turned to speak to Aramia's, to ask for this help he had been assured Aramis could give him, and at the same moment Aramis was by his side, speaking to him in the kind voice Joe had ever heard. "Your desire has been heard, my brother,"